Good morning. I'm Renee Nelson. Thanks for joining us today. And we're going to be continuing our conversation about domestic violence. And already this year, we have talked about why does she stay? And we've talked about domestic violence in the workplace. We've talked about why does he do that? The effects of domestic violence on younger kiddos. And today, we're going to be talking about kind of the bridge between the kids and domestic violence with adults. And that's our teenagers. And joining me today, Nan is with me, Nan Bell from the Family Violence Project. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
And also Karen is joining us again.
Good morning,
and
Renee.
And Nancy. Nancy, your last name is?
Nancy Provost.
And you are doing school-based education with the Family Violence Project in Southern Kennebec County?
Correct.
And you work a lot with the teenagers.
I do.
Okay. So we've already covered a lot of information this year, and so this is going to tie some of it together that we've already talked about. Now, dating abuse, I imagine that's where our teenagers start to, if they haven't been exposed to this previously in their homes, that this is where dating abuse might be the first time that some of these teens are encountering this and may or may not even know what's going on.
You have a good point there. It is very common for teens to find themselves in very uncharted water. They may not have ever seen it, although some of them may have. And I think that for some of them, they really don't know what abuse looks like.
Uh-huh.
So they can easily be in a relationship that's abusive and not realize that it's abusive at all.
Or if it has been going on in their home, it looks normal.
It does. It looks normal. Or it could just be a lesser version of what they've seen at home, but still be abusive.
And what I think I've learned is that dating is a time where teens are sort of reaching out or, you know, becoming independent from their parents, and they're testing the waters because they're going to go out and figure out for themselves. You know, I mean, just physically, that's that developmental stage where their hormones are kicking in, and you know they're going to do some exploring on their own. So based on what they've learned, they're taking some of those thoughts, maybe beliefs that they've learned, into these dating situations and trying them out for the first time. Mm-hmm. So it's an experimental stage, really, when you think about it, for teens at that time, because unless they've talked to somebody about it or maybe heard Nancy in the schools, this could be the first time they're ever trying it out, you know, in a dating situation, in an intimate situation.
Yeah, because being a teenager is already hard enough before you start adding dating to it.
It certainly is. And the piece about, you know, this being really uncharted waters for them, if you look at it from the perspective of an abusive teenager, this really isn't the first time that they've tried out that behavior. Most likely it's been modeled for them, and they may have done some bullying behaviors as they were growing up through the younger grades and into junior high, and now they're in high school and they're starting their own relationships, and it's just a bigger version of the same behaviors.
It brings up a good point, Nancy, in the fact that this is a learned behavior. And if a child has learned early on, so maybe some messages that it's okay to hit somebody, you know, maybe a boy is learned that it's okay if somebody hits you, you hit him back on the playground.
Right.
You know, and that's where when you mentioned bullying behavior.
That's right.
That's where a lot of this starts from. This idea of this behavior of how you treat somebody else when you get angry, or, you know, if somebody insults you or hurts your feelings.
Right.
How do you respond to that?
That's very true. I ask teens frequently when I visit them in the classrooms, you know, I ask the boys, how many of you have been told that if someone hits you, you hit them back? And I ask the girls, how many girls have been hit by a boy as a young girl, and you go home and you report it to somebody and they say, oh, that's just because he likes you.
Oh, yeah. That is a really horrible mixed message, isn't it?
It is. And it's more common than you think. I think more parents, more adults should be having that conversation with especially the girls to reverse that message and say that's not okay. Even as a young girl, they're learning victim behavior. They're learning to accept being victims.
So mom and dad may accidentally be feeding some of these thoughts process, right?
Exactly. And really, it's a matter of awareness, because I'm sure that many of the moms and dads who do that don't think of it as encouraging anything negative. Maybe it was something that they learned. It might have been said to them.
Mm-hmm. It ties in, too, with the parenting issue of spanking and hitting your kids. We've done programs before in parent education around thinking about using spanking as a way to discipline your child. What really are you teaching your children if you're hitting them? I can remember as a child, my dad did spank me. Mm. And I can remember him saying, "This is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you." And it's like, really? As I think about it as an adult, I don't think so. No. That really hurt when you hit me. So it's sort of like, I think it's us learning about how we treat one another and what it appropriately sort of helps a person develop in a healthy way.
Right.
And then go on to treat others in a respectful way. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting when you think about sort of the roots of where these messages come from. And Nancy, as you do such a great job, you know, working with teens and sort of bringing them around to what it is that they're actually doing. Like it's a self-awareness around how they treat each other.
Thank you.
Now, with dating abuse, how is that the same and how is that different than abuse you might find in a already well-established relationship?
Well, if you get down to the basics, what someone is actually doing, the actual abusive behavior, there really isn't all that much difference. I think as people get older, they have more responsibilities, they may get more invested in each other, they may have more to lose. But really, when it comes down to it, the behaviors are the same.
And what are some of those behaviors?
Well, we refer to those to teens as red flags, indicating that if you see these, if you see this in your relationship or in someone else's, that it either is or could become abusive. And so, you know, we're talking about examples of verbal abuse, name calling, physical abuse, things like pushing, shoving, blocking exits,
grabbing.
Yeah, and verbal abuse is very common.
Well, because you passed along a graphic to me with red flags of physical, emotional, sexual, and verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting. So I'll color code. And what jumped out at me is that for the physical, sexual, and verbal abuse kind of ways to sum it up, they had 10 different things listed. Mm-hmm. For emotional abuse, isolation, displaying weapons, moodiness, jealousy, there was a total of 9.
Mm-hmm.
And about how emotional abuse, I think a lot of times gets overlooked. Or maybe if you're learning about relationships, thinking, oh, he's jealous. He really cares. And so it gets really super confusing as a teenager and even as an adult.
That's very true. It does become very confusing. And those red flags, you know, on that list that I gave you, they really can be woven into different categories. So something that's verbal abuse certainly is also emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's where having conversations with your teens, you know, and if you have an awareness, I know I had an awareness only because of the work that I was doing. I started understanding how that emotional abuse is really challenging, because I was taught that, you know, if somebody is jealous, my boyfriend was jealous of me, he cared for me. You know, mm-hmm. that was a type of love. And, you know, I was special in his mm-hmm. eyes. So that's why he was feeling jealous. Karen, I don't know if you've had any experience with this in your teens or, you know, but that, when I think back, I recognized some of these red flags, mm-hmm. but didn't understand at the time that this could lead to this pattern of behavior in a relationship that
sure.
might be unhealthy.
I think when I was raising my now adult children, I was still living in the messages that were given to me as a child, in that you stand by your man, you know. And so I really don't think that I gave, you know, a lot to my adult children. But then I have my 6-year-old son now, and there's a huge difference. I mean, and even at, you know, four, when he was four, like I said, he was 2.5 when we left his dad. You know, and I started doing some of this work, and, you know, and the message that I give to him is it's never okay for anyone to hit anyone.
Yeah. Boy or girl.
Boy or girl.
That's right.
And I preach this to him all the time. He knows what abuse is, and he knows that there's a consequence for everyone, whether you're a child. If you're hitting at school, well, then you get sent to the office or you lose your recess. But I always go into further detail with him and say, you know, I want you to know that there's consequences for everyone, not just you as a child. When you're an adult, do you know what the consequences are for an adult if they hit? Mm-hmm. They go to jail. You know, it and so he's getting what my adult children now weren't able to get from me. And so it was a process I had to learn.
Now, I remember you saying in previous shows, Karen, that whole, you got a lot of those messages, like you said, from your mom.
Absolutely.
You know, to stand by your man. And that,
I'm getting them.
And as an adult, that must be kind of a hard to, you have to be very conscious and aware of it.
Yeah, and I were just having this conversation on the way in here this morning. It's, and I, just the other day, you know, was still getting that, you know, and I love my mom dearly, but I still get that message, that this is what you do for your man so that he doesn't, you know, go out anywhere else or, you know, there's just, and I still hear that. So it is very confusing. It's very hard. But I still try to remember what I'm learning and where I'm at now to go, okay, so that's breaking that cycle. You know, maybe she's still in that. And I think there's probably not going to change a big piece of that at her age now. But
yeah.
And I think where I go to with that, because Karen and I were talking about this earlier, is that we're lifelong learners. And I really feel like, you know, the journey of learning is ongoing. And as we're doing this work and meeting one another and sort of making our way in the world, I know that sounds kind of, you know, big picture, but it is about understanding really what we're about here and what we have, what we grew up with, what we learned. So I think individually it's all about our ability to kind of want to learn that. And that's what's so cool about doing the work that we're doing with domestic violence right now is because it is helping people understand better how we treat each other. And this is a problem that has been around for a long time, but nobody was really talking about it. So to be able to talk to teens about the fact that, yeah, you feel jealous, you know, and when is it that jealousy then borders on unhealthy? Because a certain amount of jealousy is normal.
Right. And we have the conversation with the teens that jealousy is a normal emotion, just like, you know, happiness, sadness, and all the others. But it's the way we act on those emotions. And, of course, it's a different story if your partner is trying to make you jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then that's different. That in itself is a form of abuse.
And then understanding that when it does become an issue in a dating relationship where, you know, suddenly it's happening all the time when, you know, you're talking to somebody else and then your partner's saying, hey, you know, what were you saying? Or, you know, is sort of like delving into, and it becomes problematic and then argumentative. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, there's some ownership there. Like, you owe me this explanation as to why you were doing this, because I'm feeling jealous. So it's important for us to understand those boundaries in a relationship.
And one more piece that addresses the sense of evolution that you were just talking about is the addition in the last decade of cyber abuse.
So
all of these things, whether it's physical threats or verbal abuse or emotional abuse, those can really all be the vehicle for that can often be technology.
Yeah.
Even though technology is a great thing.
Now, can you kind of just give us a little overview of what cyber abuse actually means? Because as an adult and I don't have children, I kind of understand it mm-hmm. where I could see something online and go, yeah, whatever. As a teenager, especially, and again, all those thoughts, feelings, emotions, and everything being so much, feeling so much bigger than it may really be, cyber abuse can be devastating.
It can. It can be very scary because, you know, there are a lot of misunderstandings that we have, and it's really hard to read somebody's emotion a lot of times through emails and texts. But cyber abuse basically is that when someone is using some type of media, whether it's social media or something like a cell phone or emails, and they're using those as the vehicle to deliver the abuse.
That's emotional and verbal stuff.
Yes.
I mean, it's not, it isn't the physical or...
No, maybe sometimes physical threats, but still
physical
that's
threats.
Emotional, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's something that we do a lot of these days. I mean, everything is technology. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, our kids are really adept in utilizing those tools in communicating with one another. Mm-hmm. So in essence, you know, when you're saying, Renee, that, you know, there's a lot of emotional and verbal abuse, this is a new area that it's starting to happen.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I teach the kids is about communication. We talk a lot about that in junior high. And the truth of the matter is that our words are only 7% of our communication. And if someone is getting a text or an email or something through social media that is so scary, and that's only 7% of the picture, you know, imagine what that would look like if those same words were said in person, where it's accompanied by tone of voice and body language. That would be even scarier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of makes the complete picture of communication. So you're only getting partial of that on, you know, with the technology and the words,
7%.
The word part of
it. Yeah, that's it.
And then it's subject to your personal interpretation. So that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. But communication is so essential in relationships. And to have a healthy relationship, it is important to learn skills in how to effectively communicate with each other in an honest and a clear way.
Right.
So I think technology sometimes complicates that.
Right. And because teen dating violence is so common, so prevalent, the statistic is 1 in 3 by the time they graduate high school will have been in some type of abusive relationship.
Now, is that with or without that previous prevention education? Because I know that's been a big component of what the Family Violence Project's been trying to do, is starting them when little as they can be. Like, what is it, Hands Are Not for Hitting and those programs?
Right.
Right. Preschool. Bear Thoughts is for 4-year-olds, and that's about sharing. Hands Are Not for Hitting are first through, what, third grade, Nancy? And then we have Respectful Connections is 4 through 6,
mm-hmm.
and then we're doing our Connect to Me program is middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a foundation that prevention education is offering to these to these kids.
Right, and it was a hard question to answer the way you asked it because 1 in 3, those are the victims. So So what we're also, you know, of course, we are teaching victims. We're teaching children that if you see these red flags, talk to somebody, reach out to Family Violence Project, reach out to somebody. But the statistic of how many students who are less abusive after prevention education is something that really requires a greater study.
Real, okay.
Because that fits into those long-term statistics that I gave you.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other things that as kids are coming from middle school into high school in those dating years,
mm-hmm.
that also kind of gets introduced into the equation of growing up and experimenting, drugs and alcohol. That must make a lot of these situations maybe add a little fuel to the fire on something that might be going in that direction, but can make something explosive.
Yes, and we talk about that when we talk about myths of dating abuse. One of the myths on there is that alcohol and drugs cause abuse, which is really not the case at all. Certainly it can make abuse worse, It can be a contributing factor to how fast a situation escalates. But I always say to them, it's kind of like putting a gas can, a full gas can next to a campfire. You know, it might or it might not explode, but certainly it's not a good idea to have it sitting there.
Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, being a teen's hard already, and you start adding these other things in, and it's just going to make it that much harder. Now, I'm sure that there's also this victim blaming that's going on with the teenagers. And, you know, we talk a lot about the girls who are being abused. And we talk about that mostly because the majority of those being abused are female. Mm-hmm. The majority of abusers are male. Mm-hmm. Not exclusively by any means, but it is statistically that's how it bears out. But victim blaming, even blaming victims who are teenagers, is also part of what's happening.
It's very true. That happens a lot for teens, whether it's coming from parents or other teens. The questions, you know, include why doesn't he or she leave? You know, why are they still together? Why doesn't she do something? And there's an element of blame there, you know, but there are a lot of reasons why people stay.
And Nancy, could you just offer what you talk about with the frog? Because I find that fascinating.
Okay, yeah. This goes along with the idea that a lot of teens, they really don't know that they're in abusive relationships. And so that's why when other people look in, they're like, I don't understand why they stay, because that particular teen doesn't even know they're being abused. But this story was actually relayed to me by a 17-year-old girl. And so this is what helped her to realize that she was in an abusive relationship. And the story goes that if you take a live frog and you drop it into a pot of boiling water, the frog will immediately know that it's in danger and try to get out.
Uh-huh.
But if you take the same frog and you drop it into a pan of cold water, and then you let a little time go by and you turn up the heat just a little bit, let the frog adjust, and then turn it up a little more. And over time, this keeps happening slowly, and it keeps getting hotter and hotter over a long period of time, that the water may actually reach a boiling point. The frog may not be able to get out and will have never known that it was in danger.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a really great way to kind of sum up what kind of make it really understandable what can be happening in a lot of relationships, because that is what happens. It starts with a little thing.
Right.
And then another little thing.
From the outside, other teens or adults, you know, who may be pressuring them to stay in a relationship because, you know, they want them to grow up and they want grandchildren and they want, you know, they want them to be out on their own, or other teens who are looking in on the relationship saying, oh, you two are so perfect together. There's a lot of pressure, you know, for teens to stay in those relationships. I think the statistic is 80% of girls in teen abusive relationships continue to stay with the abuser.
And what's the underlying message in our culture that women should be in a relationship or need a man, or, you know, you were saying, Karen, earlier, you know, the message from your mom, stick by your man.
Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah. And I think that's something similar that I grew up with, that it was an expectation that I get married and that I be with a man.
Yeah.
And so I find myself, going back to that, it's kind of like, well, you know, if that's the pressure from society for women to be in a relationship, you know, then it's important to recognize, you know, where that pressure is coming from.
And I think for teens, too, it also has a very social element. You know, if they run in certain social circles and then you break up with your partner, then, okay, whose friends are you going to hang out with? And what if you're at the football game? And what if you're at somebody's party? And now what do I do about the prom? And there are all sorts of implications that, you know, unless you're really in it, it's hard to come up with a list.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as a teenager, those are huge, huge issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a parent who may be listening to us and thinking, okay, maybe I want to know more about this, make sure that, you know, I'm helping my kids along the best possible. Are there resources through the Family Violence Project that parents can tap into to find out more and make sure that they are giving right messages and that they're becoming more aware as parents?
Well, I think just if you're hearing that now, it's something to think about. Are you, have you talked to your to your teenagers about the issue of teen dating violence, or you know what's going on for you in your relationships? Nancy is in many schools in Southern Kennebec County, and I know you might want to mention some of the materials and things that you're distributing to teens. She's talking directly with teens.
Yeah. Well, when I go in to visit the teens in the classroom, I give to them one of our brochures that's designed for teens, how to recognize teen dating abuse for yourself, how to get help for a friend, and how to reach us, which is the biggest piece. Yeah. And so if you're a parent out there listening and you want to know whether your child is getting this programming, you know, it is free for all the schools in Kennebec County, and so ask your school. There are some schools who do their own version of education, which is great, but I think the community connection to have with Family Violence Project is crucial, because so many of those kids out there are seeing us year after year after year, and by the time they get to high school, they've seen us 8 times already.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm happy to say that, you know, we're going to be adding a few new schools in the fall, like Mount Vernon and Reedfield and Wayne and Manchester. They're all on board with supporting, and they're going to be our newest ones to add to the list for younger grades education.
That is fantastic, because I know I've talked with Lynn Daly before about the younger programs, you know, and how really wonderful it is to have those things in the school, and the way she talks about them and the way she clearly cares, and you know, and now you with the teens bringing that second level to, that's really awesome. That's a really wonderful thing to offer all our communities.
Yeah. And for the teens, sometimes what happens is, what I'm talking to teens about teen dating relationships, they really do transfer that and apply that to the relationships that they see that their parents are in or that their siblings are in. And so it's not just for helping them and helping their peers, but it also extends into the greater community of, how can I help my sister? How can I help my brother? How can I help my parents? You know, can I have extra brochures to bring home to give to them?
And ultimately, that's why this is prevention education. Mm-hmm. We're working with the youth around understanding this better, so that they recognize it and know what to do in their relationships. And this has been going on in Kennebec and Somerset counties. In this area, these communities have been offered this information now for well over 15 years in the schools. Not as many schools as we're in today, but it's evolving. And it's an ongoing process of making that change in our community to help end domestic violence. That's what's kind of energizing about having Nancy and Lynn be in these schools for so long, that we will see results. Renee, I'm sure you asked before, you know, how effective is this? Well, we got to start taking a look at that and recognizing that I think our kids are learning, and maybe we need to be asking them, you know, is this effective? Is this working for you? And collecting some information about how many kids we hear from on the helpline, because kids are offered our helpline number, which is 1-877-890-7788. It's toll free. Nancy offers that as a free resource for teens to be able to access help.
And there's also, you have a pretty nice website too that has information there too.
And that's a great resource. You know, you can Google anything these days. So Google Family Violence Project. And it's
familyviolence.org?
Yep. Yeah. Familyviolenceproject.org.
Okay. Familyviolenceproject.org. Yep. Well, Nancy, Karen, Nan, thank you very much for talking about teenagers in this equation. We've talked, like I said, about the younger ones. We talked about adults and that whole teenage years, and where things can, you can really make a big difference on where a person's going in their life. So thank you all very much for the work you're doing.
Thanks,
Renee.
Thank you.